right now, the great thing about AI is it's really giving the defenders a strong advantage over the threat actors. When we think about AI more broadly, outside of just red teaming, we also think about AI in the use of creating detection rules faster and more efficiently. Especially when you're in the middle of an investigation, time is always of the essence. Leveraging AI to build faster detection rules that you can re-inject in the technology that you're using to track the attacker in the environment is extremely effective.
Welcome to another episode of Maniant's Defenders Advantage podcast. I am your host, Luke McNamara. Today, we are covering the 15th edition of our annually anticipated special report, MTrends 2024. I think this is probably the most quantitative intensive report that we put out here at Maniant. This data comes from our breach investigations across frontline investigations throughout last year. So this is January 1st, 2023 to December of that year. And joining me to help dive into some of the findings, I have Jürgen Kutscher, VP for Maniant Consulting here at Google Cloud. Jürgen, always great to speak with you.
Thank you for having me, Luke.
So we're talking about MTrends, which means, of course, we have to start with by the numbers. I think this is probably the section everyone first looks at when they get the report. I do. When you look at this report, what are some of the big takeaways in terms of what changed last year and maybe even also what didn't change thematically?
Yeah, I always like to start with some positive news. And when you look at the dwell time over the last several years, you see a continued decline there, which is, of course, very positive. We've gone from 16 days in 2022 to now 10 days in 2023. Certainly ransomware plays into that. We see also the ransomware dwell time significantly decreasing. But overall, we also attribute this to organizations being better at detecting evil in their environment, being faster at detecting evil in their environment. So the dwell time is a positive trend. Of course, I do have to throw in a but when you look at the time that our red teamers take on average to accomplish their missions, you realize we still need to do more work as defenders here. There's good progress. You want to highlight the progress, but we're certainly not at the end of our problems here. We need to continue to invest and bring this dwell time even further down in future years. Another interesting trend is, of course, the initial infection vector that we've seen. The top three has now been continuously exploits, phishing, and prior compromise moved up from position number four into position number three. What's interesting here is that exploits has overtaken phishing now for several years already. So clearly attackers have shifted a little bit their attack techniques with a heavier focus on exploitation. 0 days, we'll talk about that later, play a huge role here. Phishing, of course, continues to remain an important threat vector and shouldn't be dismissed, but it is interesting to see that focus towards exploits. Also, when you look at another level deeper here, when you look at, for example, the malware, we see the use of Beacon significantly decreasing over the last several years. Used to be 28%, now it is 10%. I think that goes with another thematic trend, which is attackers are trying to do a much better job of avoiding detection. And last, another area I always like to look at is what are the most heavily targeted sectors? And again, top of the list here, financial services organizations, followed by business and professional services, high tech, retail and hospitality, healthcare, and then government. Now, these shift over the years, the order changes a little bit. But one thing all these organizations, all these industries have in common is they have access to, of course, a variety of very sensitive data that is very, very attractive to attackers. So those are some of the things that always jumped out at me when I look at it, at the numbers.
And you see, I think the impact of ransomware operations playing into some of those stats. So prior compromises, for example, coming up from lower the year prior, you know, that a lot of that activity tied to ransomware operations. And then we had Kimberly and Jeremy on from the cybercrime analysis team recently, and they were talking about a drop in Beacon usage that they were seeing with ransomware. So again, we're seeing that kind of play out overall in the decline there of Beacon usage. You touched on this a little bit around the 0 day piece, but I think, you know, in our conversations before this, you were noting that there's a lot of themes this year around evasion of detection. And that we're seeing that from a couple different ways, obviously a range of threat actors, but maybe break into that a little bit more. What we're seeing, whether it's sort of living on the edge, living on the land, some of these ways that threat actors are doing more to evade detection.
Yeah, indeed. Evading detection was a huge theme in this year's M-Trends. And I sort of break it down into four separate tracks that I can think about. You mentioned living off the land. That's definitely something we're seeing attackers use a lot more frequently. What that means is rather than bringing in malware into the environment, which introduces risk to the attacker, they have to get the malware into the environment, then the malware is, of course, on a specific system or endpoint where it can potentially be detected by EDR. But also the usage of custom malware tends to be very noisy and very easy to identify as attacker activity once that malware has been identified. With living off the land, attackers use the tools that they find in the environment. So you avoid bringing in new tools into the environment. You avoid having new executables or files on systems, but you also make it harder for investigators to now know what is malicious use versus what is not malicious use. If you find a legitimate process executable program somewhere and the attacker is using it, well, how do you know this was the attacker versus a legitimate user? It gets much harder to detect. Other things, other trends we've seen is living on the edge. This is where threat actors are now specifically targeting edge devices. And we've seen plenty of examples during 2023 of attackers doing that. They find zero days in edge devices and embed themselves. So what makes this very, very difficult for defenders is that EDR technologies typically do not cover these types of devices, meaning detection is not available at an easy or convenient level. And also the actual investigation remediation activity becomes very, very difficult. Most organizations will not look at these types of devices when conducting their own investigation. And unfortunately, that means sometimes that they will fail at remediation. They think they've removed the attacker from the environment, not realizing the attacker is actually sitting on one of their edge devices. What this highlights is the importance of a comprehensive investigation and comprehensive remediation effort to ensure that these types of compromises are also identified and removed as part of the investigation and remediation. We've also seen, of course, especially China's Nexus espionage groups very heavily focusing on 0 days and identifying new 0 days. We've seen, again, multiple examples. You already mentioned it by the numbers. The 0 days exploitation, again, is the number one attack vector. We've recently published a separate white paper just specifically related to 0 days and the continued increase that nation state threat actors are doing to identify, but then, of course, also leverage these 0 days. And the fourth area that I want to talk about when it comes to the evasion of detection is how some threat actors like UNC3661 or UNC3944 are going as far as disabling or even removing EDR technologies. Now, they will use that with, they'll do that with either tools that are out there like Process Hacker, or they'll build their own custom tools to accomplish this. They're basically creating blind spots that allow them to operate, to accomplish their mission without being seen by EDR, making, of course, harder for investigators to rebuild the entire timeline, leaving alone, of course, harder for defenders to actually detect this type of activity. So those are some of the four key themes that we've seen in the last year when it comes to this evasion of detection.
Going a little bit deeper into the 0 day usage in particular, do you see a notable difference in how we're seeing some of the suspected state-sponsored actors go about employing 0 days versus what we see with, say, financially motivated criminal groups like FIN11? Is there a difference in where they're employing those, the types of technologies they're targeting? What do you see there?
Yeah, it was interesting. There's one example that really stood out to me is obviously one of the big 0 days last year was the MOVEit 0 day. We saw FIN11 very heavily make use of the MOVEit 0 day. Now, their approach was that over a very short period of time, they've compromised many, many organizations, obtained lots and lots of data for the immediate financial benefit, of course, that they're after. But it was very noisy over a short period of time, meaning the life the duration that the 0 day was effective was fairly short. It was very quickly detected. They were very noisy, but very effective in terms of how many organizations they were able to go after and how much data they were able to capture in a short period of time. On the other hand, when you look at nation state threat actors that are trying to target, for example, intellectual property, we've seen a threat actor go after Barracuda in a very, very different way, where they've maintained persistence and presence for a very long period of time. Well, initially, they went somewhat broader to try and establish their presence as quickly as possible. They're very, very stealthful in terms of what they were doing and trying to maintain this long-term persistence that we've often seen with these nation state threat actors, especially when targeting IP. So a very different approach between what we saw, for example, FIN11 do versus what we've seen some of the nation state threat actors do and perform.
So moving to talk a little bit about what we're seeing in changes or shifts in certain types of these TTPs. So for example, phishing, some of the shifts that we've seen there where threat actors are kind of expanding their scope in ways that they carry out those operations. And they're not necessarily new things. For example, employing social media to target employees of an organization as a means or vector into the organization, or using SMS-based phishing. But we do seem to be seeing more of this, and it seems to present a challenge to security organizations and the traditional security technologies and controls you have for monitoring, traditional phishing. What do you make of that?
Yeah, we've seen indeed some interesting changes. It's an evolution, obviously. It's not a sudden change, but this evolution has been very clear of threat actors becoming more and more sophisticated, especially when it comes to social engineering, how they're targeting individuals, the platforms that they're now using. You mentioned SMS messages. That's certainly something they like to use, but also social media. They befriend potential victims, build relationships, or impersonate other people. Those are all attack techniques that the attackers are now using on a much more regular basis. One interesting new thing, at least I haven't seen it before, was the use of QR codes also by attackers. Obviously, QR codes are not human readable, so even a trained security professional would not be able to detect a malicious QR code. Oftentimes, when you open them with your phone, you just see a short version of the URL on your phone being displayed. If you think about how an attacker could use that at a cybersecurity conference or at a specific industry conference, of setting up fake QR codes, embedding QR codes into emails, all of these techniques are extremely effective and continuously show how threat actors are also evolving and finding new techniques to bypass the existing security controls. And this is really what requires our defenders to think a little bit differently. We really have to shift a little bit the security paradigm, where we focus typically on user education, email gateway filtering, multi-factor authentication based on SMS or push technology. And we're clearly seeing that the attackers are evolving and are becoming more and more sophisticated. So we've seen also multi-factor authentication being bypassed by threat actors, whether they're setting up, whether they're using web proxies or setting up phishing pages for that. They're basically able to intercept sessions, replay sessions, and impersonate users. So organizations need to evolve how they think about it. We're also seeing a new trend where the payload that attackers are using has changed, including LNK forms or using weaponized Microsoft Office documents, despite the fact that Microsoft, of course, announced that they're disabling the use of macros by default. We're still seeing organizations overruling that and re-enabling them for business purposes. But those are all the trends that we're seeing. Now, what does this mean, again, for defenders? They need to think about protecting themselves in a different way. They have to accept that phishing, social engineering have all become a lot more sophisticated. User training is still important, but it's certainly no longer sufficient. Making sure they have the latest and greatest detection technologies, but also looking at building a layered defense, being able to hunt for specific cybersecurity events in the environment are critical. When it comes to multi-factor authentication itself, looking at the latest and greatest technologies. Where SMS push-based notifications were still considered good enough a few years ago, it's clearly no longer sufficient, and organizations need to think more about certificate-based multi-factor authentication or using the latest hardware tokens that are out there to ensure that these attack-in-the-middle types of attacks are being able to stopped here.
And shifting a little bit too, I think one of the articles on this that really stood out to me, in part because there's a lot that generative AI is discussed about in relation to security, is this article about how Mandiant red teamers and purple teamers have been employing that in operations that they've been doing working with customers. So what are some of the takeaways you had, some of the insights driven from how we've been finding value in employing generative AI in different parts of the attack lifecycle when we've been seeking to emulate that on behalf of a customer?
The most obvious use of artificial intelligence in our engagements has been for the social engineering aspect. Obviously, you can use AI to create much more effective and much more convincing social engineering attacks. Whether you're impersonating the voice of a CEO or anything along those lines, people tend to believe what they see, what they hear, even more than an email. You can use it, of course, for crafting better emails, and we're seeing threat actors also do that. I'll talk about that in a little bit, what we're seeing the threat actors do with AI. But for us, it is a very powerful tool for social engineering, but it does more than that. We also use AI to better understand systems in the environment. Oftentimes when we do red teaming, we come across new systems, new applications we've never seen before, and we need to understand about potential weaknesses, what these systems do, to give us ideas on how we could potentially leverage that system to further our mission as part of the red teaming or purple teaming engagement. AI is very powerful there as well, having a bot capability where you can interact with, ask questions, get additional information is extremely, extremely powerful. And those are some of the uses that we have around red teaming and purple teaming that are more related to the actual attack. But also, of course, AI is very powerful when you create your reports, when you create your slide deck, whatever it might be, whatever deliverables the client is looking for. We're using AI more and more often to help us generate specific finding blocks, et cetera, et cetera. Now, of course, right now, the great thing about AI is it's really giving the defenders a strong advantage over the threat actors. When we think about AI more broadly, outside of just red teaming, we also think about AI in the use of creating detection rules faster and more efficiently. Especially when you're middle of an investigation, time is always of the essence. Leveraging AI to build faster detection rules that you can re-inject in the technology that you're using to track the attacker in the environment is extremely effective. But also using AI to analyze sections of source code to identify, is there potentially something malicious with this source code, is extremely powerful. Bottom line is AI for defenders allows you to be a lot more effective, a lot more efficient with your time usage. I also love using AI when I need to have a quick write-up on the latest threat actor. And rather than looking at a lot of different articles, you're sitting in the war room, the CEO is walking in and wants to know, well, what do we know about this threat actor? Using AI to just get this 3-4 paragraph summary of the threat actor is just very, very powerful and makes all of our work more effective, more efficient, faster. And oftentimes, especially when you deal with ransomware cases that are moving very, very quickly, every minute you can gain is just an advantage that you gain over the threat actor. Now, unfortunately, as always, when new technologies are coming out, the threat actors will also try to identify ways that they can use it. But so far, it's been more limited. What we've seen threat actors do primarily is use AI for social engineering, especially to overcome language gaps, etc. AI can be very, very powerful in terms of crafting better emails, more convincing social engineering attacks, etc. But it seems primarily that's the first and foremost use case that the threat actors are having around AI, which means right now AI is a huge help for the defenders.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about speed. I think of that framing that we use here around threat, toil, and talent. And, you know, being able to find threats faster, do more to automate, reduce the toil, and help close that talent gap. And all three of those in their own different ways are kind of around greater efficiency and greater speed. And when you look at, again, at that dwell time continuing to come down and how short of a window you typically have to respond to an adversary, speed is, you know, one of the most important things on the defender's side. So shifting, I mean, again, this is the 15th year that we've been producing this report, and shifting into kind of your takeaways, looking at this, some things that changed last year, some things, as we're talking about before this, you know, not notable changes. I think with the industries, we see kind of the same ones move up and down. Some of the MITRE attack techniques, I think, are largely the same from what we saw the year prior. As you think about how organizations can take the findings from here and translate those into things that they can do better on the defender's side, what are some of the big takeaways you think should really be hammered home to those organizations?
The thing that really stood out to me in this year's MTrends report is the evasion of detection. I think that's where organizations need to evolve and need to make sure that they are staying current with the latest trends that we've observed in our MTrends report this year. We talked about this at length, about all the different techniques that attackers have to now avoid classic detection technologies. I think what this highlights is a couple of things, obviously. 0 days are always going to be really problematic to deal with, and there's not going to be an easy button to address that. However, there are things that organizations can do. I think the classic layered defense in depth approach still makes a lot of sense around that. Don't ever depend on a single security control to build your defenses is an important element. It also highlights the importance of active threat hunting in an environment. You can't just depend on alerts, because alerts may not always happen. So make sure you have an advanced hunting approach, leveraging the latest threat intelligence in your environment. Having good network segmentation is still something we always recommend to people as well. Slow down the attacker as much as you can once you're on the inside of the environment. I also recommend to organizations to take proactive steps. One, simulate attacks in your environment using red teaming. That's something that is really effective of highlighting any sort of blind spots. But then also complete this with tabletop exercises, and even think about going through a simulated remediation event. Make sure that you address the best practices when it comes to log monitoring. I see a lot of organizations, when we come in performing an investigation, that don't have all the right logs. They don't have all the right evidence. They rotate their logs too quickly. They don't have easy access to them. You name it. And I always say, think about we called it a few years ago, a pre-mediation event. Basically doing remediation without ever having had an actual incident. Go through all of your log settings with an incident response organization by your side. Make sure you understand what is the information that they would be looking for in the event of an attack, and make sure you have that information readily available for a potential investigation. Make sure the time window during which you retain this critical evidence is long enough based on their recommendations, based on best practices. Think about events and log types that you may not even collect today. One area, successful logons. Now, most organizations will focus on failed logons as security events. Successful logons are very important, though. When an attacker has valid credentials and is moving throughout your environment, there will be no failed logon events. There will be no alerts. You need to have this type of log file to be able to trace the attacker's step through your environment. So all of these elements can help organizations build a much better, much stronger capability. I also recommend purple teaming. They're very, very good exercises to go through with your existing cyber defense team, and having an attacker simulation and seeing how well you're able to pick things up, especially if there is no initial alert. Going back to the importance of having a good hunting program that can identify this, but then also having, of course, strong ties back to your IT organization, being able to implement new controls very, very quickly and efficiently, blocking the attack as quickly as possible. One thing we've learned, especially doing so many ransomware investigations over the years, is time is of the essence. You have very, very little time to think about how you want to handle the incident, how you want to communicate the incident, having outside counsel available. Go through all of these steps before the incident ever happens. Make sure you have a law firm on retainer, an incident response company on retainer. Simulate these attacks. Figure out exactly how you're going to handle them. Have a good communications team ready to go. Time is so critical. But then make sure also that you can try and contain these incidents as quickly as possible. Good network controls can really help slow down these types of attacks, being able to make changes on the fly. We've seen that make a huge difference when there's an active ransomware attack between victims that only have a small percentage of their systems encrypted or data stolen versus organizations that are dealing with a catastrophic event that pretty much takes down their entire network. So preparedness, in one word, is what it all comes down.
Excellent. Well, we'll end it right there. What better word to end it on than preparedness? I will let folks know, we'll have a link in the show notes to the full report. If they want to go check that out, you can also find that at cloud.google.com/security/m-trends. We will also have a webinar if you want to hear more about some of the stats and other information included in this year's M-Trends report. That will be out in May. You can find that on our landing page at that link I mentioned before. Jürgen, as always, great to talk to you. And thank you for sharing your insights from this year's M-Trends report.
Thank you.